Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mind Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as always, we are very, very pleased and honored to be able to be with you live and in living color. And certainly tonight, it is a very wonderful time period and interesting thing that's going on. I am broadcasting to you tonight from Detroit. Have a lot to tell you about in terms of that. And again, we are feel very good about being here, being able to really kind of grasp a better understanding of some of the things that we've been hearing about. But before we begin tonight's program, we're going to give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Okay, again, there's a lot going on, and I'm right now in the downtown area of Detroit, and of course it's pretty much bubbling in this particular location. Tomorrow I will be going to some other locations that is not quite like what's outside right now, which is, again, a lot of activity, a lot of places to go, and so forth and so on. It reminds me very much of a lot of major cities that have an urban exterior or kind of surrounding. So, you know, from what you hear about Detroit, you would not think that that's what's going on right now, but we know that it is. And I did not get a chance to go to Flint yet. I will be going there, if not tomorrow, then on Monday or thereabouts. However, our sister Ashira Ajua did go there today. And actually, she's in the same room with us here. She just stepped out for a few moments. So we're going to try to get her to give us a report on what she was able to do today in going to Flint. They did take water over. And in talking to Sister Shira earlier, it appears that there really needs to be a lot more collaboration or unification in working to do certain things here for the people. And then, of course, I spoke with one of my brothers, Brother Darrell, who has been here for a while. And again, what he conveyed is that, you know, just things need to become a lot more not just organized, but that, you know, the problem needs to be solved. And the problem, of course, is at this point cleaning up the mess and, you know, changing, or shall we say replacing, the pipes and things of that nature. So, again, we're going to talk more about that very, very shortly. But I'll also give you a Mumia Abu-Jamal update for what we've learned. I did talk to Sister Pam Africa earlier, and she conveyed that Mumia is doing much better, but he still is still very ill. Of course, the hepatitis C situation is still very much a you know, something that is of concern. And again, from what we are now learning, there are a lot of prisoners or inmates, shall we say, prisoners of war, shall we say, who have hepatitis C. So this is something that we really have to pay closer attention to. And, wow, what can we say? This is a very serious situation because, as we mentioned earlier, a few weeks back, that is, hepatitis C is now something that we're finding in our communities a lot more than before. And we better be a lot more aware that that's going on. Well, let's see. The first thing I think we're going to do tonight is give you all the opportunity to share with us something that you may want to share with us before we go into some of the other dialogue. If you have some things that you would like to share, certainly feel free to do so. Again, this is the weekend that is also known as Savers Day here in Detroit, is where it's being held this year, and I do plan to go tomorrow to hear Minister Farrakhan speak. So I should be able to give you a report on that next week. In the meantime, again, to give you the opportunity, if you have some information or if you have something you want to share with us, please feel free to press 1 now, and we will certainly take your call. Want to connect some dots with, shall we say, gentrification. Again, Detroit, as we know, did file bankruptcy a couple of years ago, and it's probably the only major city that we have known to have done that in contemporary times. But we want to look at how that is really connected to gentrification all across the board. Now, one of the things that we are also finding is the so-called dismantlement of educational systems, which for the most part needs to be dismantled anyway, but it seems that that's one of the things that's connected to gentrification, is to create some kind of, you know, havoc or whatever in the educational system, and that has happened here in Detroit very much as well. And again, when we talk to Sister Shira, we will kind of go into that a little bit, because that's the area that she's been working with here in Detroit to work with the teachers and, of course, the parents who are really in a very serious situation with there not having been even books for the children to, you know, to even have in the schools. So, again, it's something that we're finding all over the country. Again, I think last year, year before last, we learned that Chicago closed 50 schools. Certainly, the school board here in Detroit is definitely one that has no real authority in terms of on the local level, and therefore, you know, anything that's pretty much said or done makes little to no sense in reality. So these are connecting dots that we want you all to pay close attention to, because if you are in an area, a city, a community or whatever, and you're having issues with the so-called educational system, 9 times out of 10, that's also going to be connected to taxes going up, properties being given to corporations, developers, you know, really being seen a lot more to a greater extent and so forth and so on. And this is, of course, what has happened in Chicago, in Detroit, has already happened in D.C., and it's happening, of course, in Baltimore, certainly in New York. So, you know, again, pay very much close attention, but the question or the issue has to be, what are we going to do? Because they're going to do what they do. So needless to say, it's really going to be up to us to determine what steps we're going to make to address these issues. Okay, that's some of what we're going to talk about tonight, and I'm going to, of course, give you a report on the Brothers in Support. They had their national telephone conference call on Thursday. Powerful group of brothers are coming together to really show their support for the May Women March 20. And with that said, we're going to give you some updates on the We Charge Genocide petition that's getting ready to hit the communities nationwide, because we want to make sure that we have 1 million signatures as part of the 20-year anniversary of the Million Woman March. And again, we're going to give you more information about that as well. Okay, let's do this. We're going to go to our lines. And again, if you have a question or a comment or something you want to share with us about any of the topics that we've indicated for tonight or any of the topics that we've talked about in the past, please feel free to press 1 now. Okay, we're going to go to our line, and we have a caller at 4381. And 4381, your mic is open.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, greetings, Sister Hattie. How are you this evening?
Excellent, excellent. I was just so excited today. I was watching C-SPAN, and I just wanted to share this little tidbit of information and my learning mm-hmm. for today.
Okay.
About a black lawyer who actually uh-huh. is from my hometown, Kansas City, Missouri, who represented H. Rapp Brown, as he was called in those days.
Yes, yes.
And Florence Kennedy, and I thought, wow, she was amazing, a woman from that era, you know, to second one to graduate from the Columbia Law School. But on C-SPAN today, there was a young woman on there, and basically what she's doing is she has written a book about Florence Kennedy, lawyer and feminist. And I thought, this is just going to be so amazing, and she's hoping to move it to become a documentary. And I thought, wow, that's something that we all need to get behind, because we very rarely hear of her
anymore. Right, right, that's
And we need to keep that out forefront, particularly because of her connection with representing who she represented and what she did and all of her amazing work. So, yeah, I just wanted to share that part about my C-SPAN experience today, and it was quite wonderful. And they're putting some of her works in a library. I think it's the Schlesinger Library. And it's there. And I can't wait to go and see this phenomenal piece of work. Her papers are there now. And so it's just like, wow, I was so excited. I'm going to be going to buy books tomorrow.
Wow.
That sort of thing to learn more about her. So
Sister Hetty, just for those who may not be familiar with her, just kind of give a little overview.
Well, she came from Kansas City, Missouri, from a family that they bought into the neighborhood when they were very the very first to a white community there in Kansas City. Ku Klux Klan showed up at their door, and the father was one who basically ran the Ku Klux Klan off from his property with a gun and told him, "Don't come back." And so that was that. She went through her life there, graduated from Lincoln High School, which is my old alma mater as well, and later on moved to New York after her parents passed, and then she ran a business there, and I can't remember what business it was with her sisters. She moved to New York and then wanted to go to law school there. And what happened was they initially turned her down. And then when she confronted them about it being racial, that you're not letting me in here because I'm a black person, and eventually they changed their mind, and the guy, of course, the president told them of Columbia that law school, it wasn't, told her it wasn't because of her race, it was her gender. Okay, herein lies the quandary of this black woman in that era, in that time. And she went to law school, finished. She was the second, I don't know if it's second black person to graduate from Columbia School of Law. And there she began to do this, well, this really advocacy work, the kind of work that we really need to be doing now. But you can't, I was listening, I was just like, wow, you can't find anybody to do that work now, period.
Right.
And that's part of our problem. You just, our people just won't do it anymore. And it's so sad and sickening to me.
Right.
But that's why we're where we are. If we had some people like that still around doing that kind of, not only a lawyer, but an activist and a civil rights activist, we would surely be further ahead on the game. But anyway, that's kind of in a nutshell.
Wonderful.
What's going on with her.
Wonderful.
So it's like she was such an amazing sister.
Wow. And see, and this is what we really have to do, and that is to make sure that the work of our sisters, we've got to take on the responsibility to make certain that we keep that information circulated and their work circulated. By the way, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Sister Hetty, and I think I've mentioned it at some point during some of our radio broadcasts, that when we do the MWM20, we will be introducing what I call our 12 Sister Saints. Because the Mingleman March has evolved into a movement, and we want to have things that will represent that kind of thought process. And so I've created what I call 12 Sister Saints. And once we're able to really let our people know, particularly our sisters, but all of our people will be able to participate in what we will be doing every year, because we'll issue who our first 12 sister saints are, and the idea and the concept is that for each one of these sister saints, each year we will observe their Earth Day and or transition date and do something specifically, some kind of event, activity, or what have you, on those days or around that time. So I'll be introducing the 12, just our first 12 sister saints. And then we'll do it every year or whatever. We'll add on. But I'll be, again, conveying who the 12 sister saints are for next year's 20-year anniversary.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. Oh, my goodness. That's marvelous. I love that.
Okay.
I tell you,
and
all
again,
of your ideas are so great, though. Oh,
and see, the concept again is, see, this way we can teach and make certain that work and contributions that our women have given to us, we have to take on the responsibility to make sure that information continues, that information is expanded upon, and so forth and so on. And I can tell you a few of the sister saints are, few of them, of course, you know, are fundamental. You know, we are, have to go with them. That, of course, would be Mother Harriet Tubman is one, of course. There are a lot of things that, believe it or not, a lot of our people don't know what Mother Harriet Tubman's African name is, you see.
Okay.
And so little tidbits like that
exactly.
are things that needs to be known.
Exactly. And this history here with this particular sister, Florence Kennedy, I mean, it's so deep hidden in our history till it's
mm-hmm.
just absolutely ridiculous, because here's a woman born in 1916, died in the year 2000, I believe it said. And the sad part is that woman's history should be really circulating in full course and not just be something that you accidentally run into. It's Women's History Month next month, and
mm-hmm,
then
mm-hmm.
we have Black History Month. And I had just forgotten about a lot of things I forget about, that people that kind of, you know about, and then the movement kind of slows down, and then, like, you knew of them, rather,
right.
so to speak. And it was just, she just has an amazing piece of work, and I believe she even, some of the musicians who were not being treated fairly, she represented them. This woman was something else to be, just an amazement. But we hear about a lot of our entertainers and people like that, and we just keep their names going. And here is one that should be kept, I think, going.
Absolutely.
More than entertainment, because these are the people that were able to cause those entertainers even to get where they are, cause all of us to get where they were, all of us to have all these opportunities that we had. People like this person, and they're just, they sometimes seem to be forgotten, and it bugs me then when that happens.
Well, I'm just going to ask our listeners just to see, is there anyone out there that knows what Mother Harriet Tubman's African name was or is? I'm just curious for someone now to just press one and see. Let me know if there's anyone out there that knows what that is. Because, again, I oftentimes find that these are little things that we know a lot of history about, many, you know, our people, but there's some things that you would think, especially, you know, their Africanness, the things that really connected them to our homeland. And a lot of times we don't know what some of those things are. So, again, if there's anyone that knows what Mother Harriet Tubman's African name was, press one now. But Sister Hattie, I'm so glad you brought that to my attention about, you know, another great sister. And I want you to stay right there, because somebody apparently knows what Mother Harriet Tubman's name is. And so I'm going to open up the line for caller at 7169. You had the answer to the question of Mother Harriet Tubman's African name, 7169. Your mic is open.
Greetings, Empress, and guests, Araminta.
Araminta, yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Is this Brother Ngozi?
Yes, ma'am.
Brother Ngozi, that's right. I know that's right. How are you doing, my brother? I haven't talked with you in a while.
All is well, but I've been listening regularly.
All right, all right. Okay, well, thank you. You got it. As hey, you know your history, so obviously, give that name one more time.
Araminta.
Araminta. All right, Brother Ngozi, thank you so much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, have a good night.
All right. Hey, Brother Ngozi, was there anything else you want to share with us? Any updates on your end?
Oh, no, no. I just want to continue to listen.
All right, good, thanks. Mm-hmm. All right, family, that's Brother Ngozi, and of course he's in the Philly area, and he got the right name. Were you aware of that, Mother Hattie?
No,
aware
I was
of that
not.
One?
I didn't know her African name myself. I sure didn't.
All right. Yep.
But I know it now. Absolutely. Thank God. That's two great things I learned today. Some more.
Wonderful, wonderful. And again, she is one of our sister saints. So, you know, we're going to be sharing a lot more information. Of course, Mother Harriet Tubman is one, as well as Queen Mother Moore. She's another one of our sister saints, as well as Mother Ida B. Wells. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So those are just a few that we'll be sharing information with you about. I'm going to also give you all a kind of announcement, which I'll be making actually on February the 28th. And this is in regards to a community and media update. But at that time, we're going to be putting out this information. And since I have Sister Hattie on the line, because she's worked so many years with some of the youth, with some of the children. And so I'm going to let you all get a little insight into, since I'm here in the city of Detroit, one of the reasons why I am here is also to begin looking at the possibility of MWM having its own sneaker manufactured. And I think we might have heard us mention this some time ago, and we're literally now going to the next step. But here's the other piece to that. We are going to announce on the 28th that we want some of our young folks, some of our youth of junior high and high school, but also on the college level, or, you know, just in that age bracket. They don't have to be in school at all, actually, but may have some artistic talent. And so what we want from them is to start sending us some designs for our sneaker. What do you think about that, Sister Hattie?
Hey, another great idea.
All right. This way, you know, it allows our youth to really have some direct involvement in MWM 20. So, again, keep a lookout and an ear out for that, because that's something that we're going to see. Absolutely. And, again, we'll be putting out that information on the 28th of February. And with that said, you know, we'll let people know what the specifics are that we want them to do. But we're reaching out to primarily the age group that would be in junior high, high school, and college. And I think roughly up to around the age of 25. Okay. So, you know, start getting our young folks ready, because we have some serious
amazing
artists out there and serious
creative.
You know, and so we want to give them the opportunity to help build up their portfolio, to help build up, you know, their capability, that when they're ready to move forward, they can have something in there that says, look what they contribute to, you see, and give them a little edge in what they might be trying to do in the future.
Amazing.
Okay, so that's kind of some of what we're going to be looking at. I was going to try to grab Sister Shira before she got into her next mode to give us the report on today. And so if she will just allow us, I know she was getting ready to take care of some business for tonight, but she said she will give us that information, because I really wanted to hear about the
today she was able to go to Flint and with that, you know, really talk with the people and really feel and see and hear what was really going on there. So she's going to be joining us in a few moments. But Sister Hattie, I want to thank you again for, you know, sharing that information. And again, very soon we'll be connecting back with you because we're really getting ready to start our calls for the sisters. We just did one on Thursday with brothers. And I'm telling you, it was really, really good, really powerful. So very shortly we'll be having telephone conference calls for our sisters who are ready to become involved with helping to coordinate some of the pieces for MWM. So we're going to be connecting with you within the next week to begin working on the committees. Okay.
I will be looking forward to that. Thank you, and thank you for all of your hard work. We really appreciate you having that energy, expertise, and all of that intelligence and creative. You're just awesome. That's all I can say. What you're doing.
Oh, my sister, I thank you so much.
Great work, and keep it up, and take care of yourself.
Absolutely. In fact, you know what? Stay right there because Sister Ashira is going to be joining us, and I know she might want to holler at you for a quick moment.
Oh, okay.
And so, okay, so just give me 1 minute, and I think we have her. Yep, right there. Hey, my Sister Ashira.
Greetings, Sister Empress. So good to have you in the city of Detroit, Motor City.
Oh,
hey, Mother Hattie.
Well, hi.
Yes, it's good to be here. It's good to be here. I'm loving the energy here.
Great.
Another mountain mover, mountain shaker.
Oh, my goodness. And if anybody can move the mountains, honey, Sister Empress, she can certainly do it. I'm so glad to have her here. It's an honor for her to be here.
Well, Sister Ashira, tell us about your experience today when you went over to Flint.
Well, a few of us traveled over to Flint, which is just up the road from Detroit, I think maybe just about an hour away. And when you arrive in Flint and drive around, of course, once you migrate from, like, the inner part, like where the college is, and you start driving through the neighborhoods, it's really like the time clock just stopped, like in 1952, 55 or something. And, you know, if you know any history of Flint, Flint was like one of the booming cities where people could come and enjoy an extremely good life. Flint has a lot of history. I think the first, like, protest sit-in against, like, the car manufacturing companies took place there in, I think, 1937. So Flint is a fighting city. It's a fighting city. A number of great college basketball players, I believe, have come out of Flint. Flint's known for producing some excellent basketball players, I believe. But we went there to deliver some water to some of the people in the community. We were in particularly trying to reach some of the senior citizens and the elderly that possibly couldn't come out to pick up the water because I know the news media has been showing, like, all the water being delivered. And there is quite a bit of water, but it's not always reaching everyone. And in some places just have water piled up. And so you have some people that have an abundance of water, and some people need more water. But here's the deal. Even though there's an abundance of bottled water, who wants to always have to take a bath with bottled water in the sink? Who wants to always have to go and pick up water? I mean, every car you see has bottled water in the trunk. Who wants to continue living like that for the next year? So despite truckloads of water being delivered, we were delivering water. You know, Jesse Jackson had a rally in Flint yesterday. Didn't hear too many people speaking about that rally, but there was another rally by the organized by New Era Detroit, a young people's group, patterning themselves after the Black Panther Party, and also a group by the name of BRIC. Not too familiar with either one, just found out about New Era Detroit this past week and just happened to run into them. They just finished a rally, and then they were going to deliver more water in the community. So we actually went to a nursing home that said a big truck had just dropped off cases of water. So you see people with truckloads and pallets full of water and everything. But, again, who wants to have to continue to take a bath in this water? There's no call. Well, there is a call by a small group for, of course, Governor Snyder to be recalled. Some people are, of course, saying that he should be arrested, indicted, and serve time. And I tend to lean towards that way because Governor Snyder, Darnell Early, the previous emergency manager, and a host of others, people with the EPA, with the Michigan Department of, it's the MDQ, Michigan Department of, Quality Water, something like that. Anyway, these people all knew what was going on in Flint with the water for quite a while, not just this year and a half or 2 years that they're speaking of. They've been knowing this for some years. And let me just share this with you. So, of course, we know that GMC knew that the water coming from the Flint River after the water was transferred. When GMC contacted Governor Snyder's office and said, hey, we no longer can use this water because it's rusting the engine parts, which that was over a year ago, then therefore, if you think that the water is not sufficient enough for GMC engine parts, why would you continue allowing the people to drink the water? So these people knew exactly what they were doing. They did not care. You have areas in Flint where on this side of the street they get the clean water, but then over here, across over here, then they have lead water. It's ridiculous. And so, of course, you know who's forced to drink the lead water. And I didn't even know people fishing in the Flint River. And I asked them, I said, so you're fishing here?
Oh, my gosh.
And they said, yes. And I said, is this the contaminated water? And you know what they said? They said, probably so.
What?
What was that on that? So, but it's just unreal that this is allowed to happen, and this man has not been arrested, and he is allowed to stand in front of a mic, in front of a podium, and act like he really is concerned and really wants to fix the problem. Money has been filtered in. And see, places like Detroit, Saginaw, Flint, these were, of course, all booming cities at one time. And really, Detroit is still not a city that is in bankrupt. It's not a poor city at all. I like to compare Detroit to some places in Africa. It's the land that's rich, and the people are poor, and people are extracting the resources from the land. So Governor Snyder siphons all the money from places like Detroit, Saginaw, Flint, and then he'll shuffle that money into places like Grosse Pointe, different places where other groups of people live, like white people live, or more poor community. And so, therefore, they create this debt. They take money away from, like, the school system, DPS, and then they declare a city broke after they bring in, of course, their buddies that they put up on a review board, and then they pay them to say what they want them to say, to give the report that is desired. And then they say, okay, let's put a stamp on it. Let's push through this emergency manager. It's done. It's sealed. And then you have a new emergency manager controlling everything. So it is unbelievable.
This is a pattern, you know. This is what they are doing in many, many cities. And so, again, you know, this is what we've been telling our people. We better pay close attention to what's going on wherever you are, because the pattern is pretty much the same. Sister Sheriff, now you've also been working with the educational piece here. What are some of the latest developments with that?
Well, let me just share this one quick thing about the water in Flint, and then I'll be more than happy to speak on DPS. So now, you know, Nestle extracts water from Lake Michigan, right? So Nestle, check this out. Well, these people got a Ponzi scheme, I keep saying. So Nestle extracts water from Lake Michigan. mind you, none of these companies in Detroit, all these buildings, speaking loans, all of these buildings, they don't pay any taxes, okay? No taxes on any of this. None of their money, nothing. No taxes, tax-free. So if the city's so broke, you should at least want to give something back, right? Okay, but anyway. So, okay, so let's just walk through this. Okay, so Governor Snyder's chief of staff, the one that resigned, Musgrove, his wife is the spokesperson for Nestle. Nestle extracts the water from Lake Michigan. Okay, Nestle is tied into all of this whole water deal with the people in Detroit not having their water.
Wow.
And all of this Flint, the water. Okay, so Nestle, now knowing that these people are receiving, their water has been contaminated. So, of course, what bottled waters are being sold and given back out to the people? Nestle bottled water. Because I specifically said I don't want to deliver any Nestle water to anybody, but you know what? That's what's primarily on the trucks, Nestle water. And so
wow.
You prevent the people from having free water, but you'll bottle it up and resell it back to them. But if you're extracting the water and it's a lead problem, why don't you just bring in, this is what some of the people were saying, why don't you just bring in huge tanks, water tanks, and allow the people to come fill up every day? Instead of these bottled waters, allow people to fill up gallons, have tanks station. All of this can be worked out. If we can build skyscrapers and create a place like Dubai, and if we can go to the moon, so why can't they have the National Guard bring in some tanks of water so these people can have water? Why don't you fix the pipes? But see, this is what a lot of people are saying. They're going to declare all of these houses unfit, which gives them, of course, the opportunity to do so many things, take away the children, take away the homes, and then they'll give them a voucher, move them out somewhere, and then in 10, 15 years, all the industry will come back because you will have removed the primarily African-American population from out of that area. That's prime area, right by the prime real estate,
right
by these lakes. So they want the land. As always. So, and with DPS, if you can not educate the children, what Governor Snyder wants to do is create what they call an old code, new code. You may hear some people say that. So he wants to create two school systems, one school system to pay off the debt, one school system that will educate the children. So what do you mean? So the other school system is not going to educate the children? It's just doing what then? So people are upset about it, but what is the plan to stop it? Because we can go to Lansing and all of that, which people have been going to Lansing. Trips are planned to go to Lansing in the coming week. But I think what's really going to happen is there's a push to really dissolve the DPS system, the Detroit Public School System, just as what happened in Inkster, another historic black town. But see, you have people like Darnell Early, and then it's another black man. He was holding up progress in Inkster, and I just found this out. I did not know this. Michael Jackson tried to help someone else. He was going to finance a casino in Inkster, a historic black small suburb right outside of Detroit. They call that mini Detroit. I think they used to call Inkster Africa. That was another little Africa, Inkster. And so this black man, another old black neck, like Dr. Short says, he said he would lay out in the ground in front of the tanks before he would allow some, I think he was mayor at this time, before he would allow Michael Jackson to come and help build a casino. And it wasn't just about Michael Jackson. He just didn't want other black people to progress. But he pushed and pushed and pushed, they said, for this Greek town casino to be built right in the middle of downtown. But didn't want a casino that Michael Jackson was going to help finance. years ago in Inkster, Michigan. And that's,
wow,
that's part of the problem. You got some of these folks like that, the Darnell Earlys, these black necks, and this man, and I do, please forgive me, his name escapes me, but he actually prevented any type of revenue coming into Inkster. Inkster could have been just fine. There would have been no eradication of the school system, none of that, because it would have been a wealthy city, a wealthy township, a municipality. So this is, these are some of the things that are going on in this Detroit area, and it's coming to a city near you if everybody don't get up and fight.
That's right. That's right. Well, my sister, as usual, you always bring us a powerful and insightful report. I thank you so much. And with that said, as you know, one of the things that we will be talking about further, you and I, because we're right in the same area, closer than that right now. But anyway, we talked about really beginning to propose to a greater extent independent education for our children. And so, you know, again, family, this is something that by next week we'll have some information for you as to how we plan to proceed with that. Because as quiet as it can, Detroit is one of my sister cities. As Sister Hattie indicated earlier, I have bunches of ideas, but I can also tell you that my ideas transform into action. And so I've selected seven sister cities, and Detroit was one of the sister cities before all of this happened. And MWM, as part of its mission for the 20-year anniversary, is committed to making certain that something happens in each sister city that will be an ongoing service or something that's happening. So we're going to tell you more about that. And it seems like education for Detroit, it may be one of the things that we set up here in Detroit, because it falls in three categories. It's either going to be education, health, and or culture, that we're committed in developing something that's independent that will be there on an ongoing basis. So, again, we'll tell you more information about that next week. So my sister, Ashira Ajua, has been talking with us about, you know, what's going on here in Detroit. She just came from Flint today. Of course, been working with the educational piece, environmental piece. And, hey, family, stay tuned. There's more to come.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Bit.
Oh, sure.
Okay, and so let's keep our eyes on this so-called recall, because the person that's over the investigation of Governor Snyder, he's a contributor to his campaign. So we need to keep our eyes on that. Mm-hmm. It's a Ponzi scheme. These people are all working
together. Isn't he also the Attorney General?
Yes.
He's the Attorney General representing the governor, as well as, it's like, what?
His name is Flood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Flood, F-L-O-O-D.
But he how can you represent someone and then investigate their wrongdoing? I don't get that one.
Yeah. Oh, he said no matter what, they're going to do a full investigation.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, right.
I bet you will.
Yeah, he contributed like $2,000.
Full exoneration.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then his name is Flood. Wow. How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How interesting.
Flood.
All right. Well, thank you again, my sister. And I'm sure our brother Mike is going to have something to add to that little scenario from a kind of a legal standpoint or from a law standpoint. So, again, Sister Hattie, thank you. And also, Sister Shira, always thank you. Much love to you both.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Okay, we're just going to now kind of take another little spin in a little different direction. This time we're going to go to the Big Apple, so-called Big Apple, up the New York way, and coming in to bring their report is, we talked with Sister Keisha, I think it was last week, and of course she was telling us about the program that she was a part of last week, today, and tomorrow, And, of course, it was focusing on black love, and certainly we definitely need to talk more about that and spread the love and all that goes with it. And today, of course, was one of the first sessions for that. And so it just so happened we got Sister Keisha with us. And we're going to bring in Brother Mike in a few minutes, too, but I'm going to talk to Sister Keisha about the black love celebration that took place day with she and Big Mike was there, but also Professor James Small. And so let's do this. Let's go back to our live line and welcome our Sister Keisha. Hey, sis.
Hey, Empress. How are you?
All right, all right. So how'd it go today?
It was fabulous. We're
I'm
leaving
sure.
now. Mike is driving me home. He's sitting here driving. And, you know, it was a topic that you know, the promoter brought to me, and I had to get on board with it because we are out of line when it comes to relationships. And if you don't have strong black relationships, you really have nothing to fight these beasts out here for. So I try to put everything in perspective and how we can make our relationships stronger as black men and women and as, you know, to improve our tribal relationships as well. You know, those of us who were born here, with those who were born in the Caribbean and on the continent, we have to strengthen these relationships and put our personal ideologies to the side and make this happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what were some of the things you covered today?
Well, I talked about being blindsided by statistics, number one, where it claims that black women aren't worthy of being married or aren't getting married as the numbers indicated. You know, I went into how these statistics are manipulated. I talked about how to strengthen your sex life, how to, you know, just strengthen your relationship on a whole. You know, we have to work on ourselves because a lot of us are dealing with various issues like sexual and physical abuse, depression, mental illness, and things like that. And you can't forge a strong relationship with somebody who is mentally ill. You don't have the expertise to deal with that. So, you know, also you're not being stuck in bad relationships. If it's not working for you, then you need to exit left and move on to something that can benefit you and your well-being.
That's right.
So we covered
That's right.
the spectrum, and it, you know, the people loved it. And tomorrow is part two with Professor James Small. I'll be there, and my brother Mike Graves, who came in and opened up for me, did a fabulous job. And he
All right.
discussed responsibility, a manhood, and what that role really means. And he tied the history of our people in struggle, our history with what has happened with massacres of our people, whether it be Wilmington or Rosewood or Tulsa, Oklahoma, all of this in relationship to today where you don't have that strength of black manhood. And in order for, you know, us sisters to love and respect you truly, you have to live your manhood. So he did a fabulous job on that, and I thank him immensely for coming in and doing that.
All right, all right. So now part two, or shall we say the next session, is tomorrow. So tell us a little bit about that time, location again, and so forth.
It's the same location, 570 Fulton Street. That's Nicholas Brooklyn Bookstore. Professor Smalls, he's going to tap on relationships and the relationship we have with our God force and various things like that. So I'm looking forward to that. It's 6 p.m. or 4 p.m. tomorrow with Professor James Moore. I will be in attendance for that. And hopefully, you know, my goal is to build relationships. I had a sister who came in. I didn't know she was going to be there. She's a younger female. She's about 30 years old, and I had no idea that she followed so much of my work and is so impassioned by the things that I do that it inspired her to do the great work that she does. So you never know when our young people are watching you and studying you. We have to be on point with that. It's a lot of talking and not enough action in our communities. And I definitely brought up MWM 20 As a matter of fact, I brought it more because I had a panel discussion earlier today and at a seven-day Adventist church on top of that. And the topic was, does Black Lives Really Matter? So I let them know what MWM20, what our goal really is, and we will have an or else agenda, unlike what we were told
you
before.
You got that right.
But with MWM20, we have an agenda, and we are going to follow through. And, you know, the work that you're doing, I ask the audience to tune into your show, to tune into Mike's show, so that they can get this public affairs information that they so desperately need so that we can build these relationships and make them stronger.
Absolutely, absolutely, my sister. I give thanks. Wonderful report, and definitely the work that you are doing, you and, of course, Professor Small, and definitely our brother Mike, is so much needed, and we appreciate all that you are doing. And, you know, look forward to this continued building that we have. I mean, it is powerful. We can feel it already. I don't know if you heard earlier, I'm right now in Detroit. So, you know, there's a lot going on. Now, one thing I wanted to share with you before we bring in Brother Mike, I don't know if folks are aware, there was a report that came out last week that City Council for Philadelphia is getting ready to hold hearings. Yep. Get ready to hold hearings on the water testing. And what has been determined is that the testing that's used in Philadelphia is worse than the testing in Flint. Okay?
See,
so I'm saying that to say. That's right. So I don't know. Have you all checked out what's going on in New York with the water? Yeah.
Well, supposedly it's the best water source in the country, but I got me a gallon of Kenyan water right now. I'm not messing with that.
I know that's right.
You know, I'm rolling with that. I can't mess with that.
I know that's right, sis. All right, well, you stay right there. I'm going to go over to the next line and bring in our brother Mike Grave and let's talk to Big Mike and see what's going on his end. Greetings, Brother Mike.
How are you, Sister Empress?
Oh, just wonderful, just wonderful. So you and Sister Keisha tanned it up there, huh?
Yeah. You know, she brought me in and told me to open for her, and certainly it was a joy to do that. I talked about responsibility when she told me she was going to talk about Black law, then I said, well, it just can't be a love fest. We're going to have some responsibility in here. So
absolutely.
I talked about responsibility and went into extensively kind of like into everything from what responsibility is, and that's being able to deliver and do all the things that is within your power at any given time. And it is obligatory, it is mandatory that we be responsible one to another. And
that's
the black man and the black woman collectively has to protect the black child. So I said that if you know, I remember the old songs in church as a little boy about, were you there when they crucified my Lord?
Right.
And
right.
So, and of course, it's very easy and convenient to sing about something that might have happened 2,000 years ago when you weren't there. Of course you weren't there, so you can easily sing about it because it doesn't require any responsibility. So we could sing about things that Frederick Douglass talked about pursuing, and we can highlight the pyramids and all that stuff because we weren't there.
Right.
You know, however, when it comes to right now, action right now, if Dominic Strauss-Kahn, DSK, who was the head of the IMF, if he's raping black women, then where are the black men? If anybody from, whether it was the allegation, the strong allegation about Sanford Rubinstein, who had raped the black woman from the National Action Network, and the National Action Network didn't even support her. That only shows you that she's getting out of the car. I'm dropping it off as we speak.
Okay.
But she's going to hold
okay.
on the line, but I'm just dropping it off at her house now. So
right.
The you know, we talked about responsibility, that all hands got to be on deck. So if you wasn't around to help Harriet Tubman, or you wasn't around to help Rosa Parks or Ella Baker, well, you had now. So if you weren't in those other generations, well, when DSK was on the rampage, or whether it was Sanford Rubenstein or somebody else, anyone that would dare touch a black woman or a black child, 6-year-old black child being killed, little girl and girl 17, 18, 16, 17 being incarcerated, and they dying the next day in police custody. And we walking
right.
around too normal, getting on planes, checking in the hotels, using the plastic, you know, and just we just a little bit too comfortable with this going on.
Mm-hmm.
Where I mentioned
mm-hmm.
that when in the time of what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, these black men heard that white men were going to invade the jail and take the prisoner from the sheriff, the black man who allegedly had touched the white woman on the elevator, and it grew and grew to a point where they was saying that there was some sexual misconduct there, and they were going to take justice in their own hands. These black men who had came home from the war, they camped outside of the jail and dared any white man to touch the brother.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the white men went over there and started something with one of them brothers, and he got his brains blown out. And that's
mm-hmm.
what started, you know, the static in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know,
mm-hmm.
Black Wall Street. So I'm just saying, if we could do that then and wouldn't allow
that's
anybody
right.
to touch a black man or woman, then how are we now? I mean, how could Reverend Shelton be caught in a gang rape and his bottle of Viagra was left there as evidence that he supplied these white men?
Wow.
Like gang rape a sister from a continental sister from Africa.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm just saying, this is madness that we're in now. So I was there to talk about black love, but I had to talk about black responsibility. Because,
right, which is a part of love. Which
yeah.
has to be for us a part of the love.
Right. And any black man that would allow any white man to touch any of our women or children, he should not be loved. No woman should give herself to a black man who's not willing to die for her.
Mm.
If he ain't willing
wow.
to put his life on the line for her, then why should she give herself to him?
Wow, that's right. Mm.
So, I mean,
love
that's where
it.
I was at. I'm all for all the benefits that go along with a marriage or a partnership. But if that man doesn't meet a certain standard, then you move on and find a real man. You know?
Yep.
So that's where I was coming from. And I'm just saying that you can pick whether it's 100 years ago, 200 years ago, because it doesn't demand responsibilities. But I eventually got up to a crisis that occurred in our lifetime and said, well, where were you? Were your hands on the deck at that time? When you shucking and jiving, who's holding the line? I mean, we have to understand that. I mean, look, you know, tomorrow many of us will commemorate or in some way remember the assassination of Malcolm X. Well, who
yes.
was sleeping at the wheel during that?
Wow.
You know, we have to understand that. There's a responsibility factor in all this. The love that, you know, we're supposed to have organizationally. You know, if you're existing now and you don't have the right backbone and intestinal fortitude in your organization, then that organization is going to have problems. If you don't have an organization, you already have a problem. If you're not involved
right.
in an organization, then the only reason you exist is because the white man hasn't stepped to you. Because if you're an individual, you're only alive at his pleasure. That is the only reason for your existence, that he chose to leave you alone, because he can reach out and touch you anytime he feels like it.
That's right.
And that's the reality. If you're not in an organization, if your organization cannot withstand the slings and arrows of white supremacy, you're in trouble because it's coming. If you're about it, the slings and arrows are coming at you.
That's right.
So that's what I was talking about. The love, yes,
okay,
but responsibility.
And just to say, give a sidebar, Brother Mike, also, nowadays, we have to also, you know, be responsible in telling folk, of course we want people to be a part of an organization because, you know, as it often is said, you know, there's strength in numbers and so forth and so on. But we have to also advise folk to engage in organizations that are really going to be about the work, that's really going to stand up, and
that's
really
right.
not going to sell us out. That's
right.
very important. Because you could be involved in an organization and it just be business as usual and some more
right.
Negro stuff.
That's right. A whole lot of that. I
right.
asked the audience, I said, do you remember Rosa Parks? They said, yeah. I said, do you remember the other sisters who should have been supported like Rosa Parks?
That's
and
right.
And they didn't really know the answers. I said, okay, fine. Somebody said, Claudette Colvin. I said,
yeah.
Well, what about the other one? They said, what other one? I said, Mary Louise
mm-hmm.
Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't
mm-hmm.
she supported? But they supported Rosa Parks.
Right.
I said, now, I doubt that the excuse they used is that she was a card-carrying member of the
NAACP.
But they ain't going to
mm-hmm.
admit that she was light-skinned.
Right.
Ooh. They ain't going to admit that. I mean, who's going to tell you they wasn't going to support those two other sisters because they were dark-skinned? I said, nobody walks around and say, with the sign on their head saying, I'm brainwashed by the white man. I mean, ain't no Negro ever admitted I'm brainwashed and proud of it.
I know that's right. Ooh-wee.
I said, we having all these discussions about scandal and empire and all this other stuff, and they asked me, I said, I ain't never seen it. And they said, why you ain't never seen it? I said, I have a finite amount of brain cells, and I can't waste it on watching scandal and all that stuff.
Right, right.
I said, because this stuff out here is serious. There's a scandal going on every day. What I got to watch it on TV for?
True.
I mean,
right.
we got people scheming and plotting and planning, undergirding white supremacy that look like us. And I know you got that in Philly. Some of the biggest Negroes you want to see is in Philadelphia.
You know that's right. Hey, what did the, although he wasn't referring to Negroes per se, but we always say when Du Bois wrote the Philadelphia Negro, that was
uh-huh.
for you to pay close attention to some stuff.
Right. And Philly should be the blackest blacks in the world should be in Philly. Philly got
that's
a
right.
long history. A long history of struggle. The oldest black churches and some of the oldest freedom
yep.
movements are in Philly.
Absolutely.
But you had one of the most vicious police officers who became a chief of police and eventually became mayor in Philadelphia, and
that's
Frank
right.
Rizzo.
And
you had one of the meanest law enforcement persons
right.
of all time in Philadelphia.
And not only became mayor once, but mayor twice. And for those of you who are not familiar with Philly, there is a huge statue of Frank Rizzo in front of what's known as the Municipal Services Building. And you remember how Hitler was known when you would see the Hitler with his hand up for the high Hitler signal sign?
Yeah.
That's how Frank Rizzo's statue is in front of the Municipal Service Building. His hand is up like this, like.
Wow. Wow, and I mean, who's going to take it down?
I'm still trying to figure out how to get up there in the first place.
Well,
nobody even know
quite
the
a
answer.
Few black mayors. That thing should have been taken down a long time ago.
Absolutely. But whenever
any black
I ask,
mayor that's worth 2 cents should have took that down.
Whenever I ask, how did Frank Rizzo stand? Nobody seems to know. Because usually it goes through city council or something, and there's some kind of vote or whatever. Nobody seems to know how that statue got put up.
Well, look, Frank Rizzo ain't never seen a beating or a shooting that he didn't rubber stamp.
That's right.
His police department could do anything they wanted to do.
And then
I read his history, and I remember reading where when he became a captain, he was the first captain to give black cops, patrol cars. He was so happy to make captain that it's amazing that he allowed them to, instead of doing foot patrols, he gave them cars. He was so happy about being a captain because he was in such full control. He was a great, magnanimous, white supremacist, foot on your throat captain that said, go ahead, niggas, get in the car. You got a car.
Yep.
That's how vicious he was.
Yep.
That and the black cops couldn't believe it that he was the first one to get them patrol cars.
And you know what else is interesting? And you know, cops don't tend to want to tell on cops or whatever, but the FBI
right.
investigated the Philadelphia police under him and said it was one of the worst, notorious things that they had ever seen. And
right.
That was
the
FBI.
Right. Well, I mean, look, he didn't hide it. I mean, he once told the press, black folks was having a demonstration, and the press overheard him say, I can't wait till the press leave because all these niggas standing out here, I'm going to split their heads. In other words, he was letting them know,
ooh,
only reason why I ain't started doing my thing is because the press is here. Once those TV cameras leave and you don't leave with it, I got you.
That's right. Oh, yeah, he was notorious. There's no question. And would tell you straight up exactly how he felt about whatever.
Mm-hmm. So that was my message, black responsibility. A long time, and it was not in any way a contradiction to what Keisha was lecturing on, because she had a beautiful lecture on black love. And tied in some historical facts, too. She wasn't just philosophically waxing on black love. She kept it real and talked about, responsibility also. And she talked about, her compilation of all the murders and hangings that went on not only hundreds of years ago, but in the last 15, 20 years. So she was on point with it and profound. She was profound tonight. And I really enjoyed myself, took a seat after I spoke, and just sat back and listened to Keisha. She was good.
I know that's right. We're going to try to bring Sister Keisha in the last week of March for Philly to close out our Women's History Month celebration. So I'll keep you all posted on that. Big Mike, what happened this week on Community Cop? I missed it this week. So give us a little overview of what was happening this week.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. There's so much things that's happening. I'm trying to remember. Well, I'm drawing a blank right now. I'm just saying that show was so deep.
Wow.
I'm trying to remember the stuff that we did. It was like we got so many calls on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible. I can't even remember right now. Wow. It was awesome.
All right.
well,
while you're thinking of it,
was...
I want to let people know just a brief update on Major Tillery. For what we understand, Major Tillery is back in the hole. So we're going to give you some information shortly that kind of gives you some insight into what needs to happen with that. Sister Pam, I did talk with her earlier, and she went up to see Mumia. And, of course, he is doing much better. But there's still, some problems. No, but he's much better. But there's still some problems that need to be addressed, and I didn't get a chance to go in depth with her about it, because she's in Chicago right now with Chairman Fred. I talked to both of them earlier today, so everybody's kind of like running, because she was with Mumia yesterday, then flew to Chicago, And so, you know, and she's speaking there, so I didn't get a chance to get a full report, but that'll definitely be forthcoming next week, and we'll be able to give everybody the updates on that. But what she did convey to me is that Mumia is better, but there are still some issues and concerns that need to be looked at closely. And, you know, again, we'll be bringing folks some information on that next week. And Major Tillery, of course, is the brother who was the one that kind of, you know, put folks on alarm that there was a crisis with Mumia in the first place. And now apparently he's back in the hole. Because ever since he, you know, got people aware that there was... Well, I'm not sure yet, my brother. I will be able to tell you that in a few minutes, though, because I just received some information on it. So before we close out tonight, I'll be able to tell you exactly why they're saying he's in the hole again. He, you know, initially when they start putting him in the hole, it was in retaliation. Because he was the one that pulled, you know, everyone's coat about there was something wrong with Mumia.
Right, right. I remember that. I remember that.
Yep.
But if Mumia's in the hole, they should have a reason for that. If he has not done anything and violated any rules,
he's not in the hole. It's Major Tillery. It's Major Tillery that's in
Major
the hole,
Tillery.
Not
Mumia. Right, right,
right,
right. Okay, okay,
right.
Okay, okay. And there's still, this is all retribution for him pulling the coat that they were trying to kill him.
Right. That's
okay.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
When they brought attention that Mumia, this is when Mumia had lost all that weight, and
he might have been the reason. He might be the very reason that Mumia is alive now. You know, for him to put out the clarion call, might have saved his life.
Him and others have said.
He had not
let them know, because at that point, Mumia didn't even know how sick he was. So
was
it was Major Tillery.
How much time is Tillery looking at?
I don't recall right now, but what I do remember is he, too, is now having some issues with his health. And apparently this putting him in the whole thing is with him, just like it did with Mumia, is exasperating the situation. Because remember,
right,
what happened with Mumia, Mumia had hepatitis C that they knew about for more than 10 years. But they never gave him any at all kind of treatment for it. And so what
wow.
ended up happening, right, exactly, what ended up happening when he already had hepatitis, the diabetes kicked in. And
right.
so this is when he went into the diabetic shock, because he had hepatitis already.
Oh, my goodness. Does he have his own doctor yet?
No.
Or are they still treating him with their doctor?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then as Thomas Jefferson said, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. So I hope that Sister Pam and everybody remains vigilant, because that's the only way that Mumia will stay alive. You know, that's the only way he's going to stay alive.
I was talking with Brother Darrell earlier, and he was showing me some pictures of a group that had went to Brazil. And he was not aware of how powerful or how much support that Mumia has in Brazil. You know, he was showing me some photos of a group that had gone to Brazil. They represented Mexico. They represented China and other countries. And they had a rally in Brazil in support of Mumia. And they all had their signs up in their language, Free Mumia. So,
I'm with all that, sis, but two things. One, that he has independent medical treatment. And two, fight to get him another trial. I respect
no
all that support all over Europe and other places that he gets and enjoys. but he has to have an independent doctor, and he also has to have another trial. If he's afforded another trial and he has the right counsel, you can tell that all of that stuff is bogus that he's charged with. And there's no way in the world he would get a life sentence in a fair trial based on their lack of evidence.
Well, you know, that's been pretty much the call all along, especially in particular from the concerned family and friends, which I've been, you know, seeing them and working with them for the past 25 years. So I know the position with them is for a new trial. You know, I mean, I've been involved in that work. That's definite. And certainly, you know, Sister Pam is very adamant about there being, you know, Mumia's own doctors. As a matter of fact, as I indicated, tomorrow the minister will be speaking, and it was Minister Farrakhan that said he would pay for independent doctors. You know, he would not only, whatever it costs, he said he would, you know, pay for that. But the so-called prison people said no.
Well, of course, because they planned on him never getting out of there alive.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, you know, we have to continue to be very, very vigilant and just not let these people do what they are certainly planning to do, and that is, again, they weren't able to kill him by way of the execution that they wanted, the lethal injection or what have you that they wanted to give him. So now it's kind of a slow death. That's what's going on now. So, you know, we'll keep everybody posted on how this thing develops, because you know it's going to be a continual ongoing battle. And needless to say, April is coming, and there's always activities around Mumia's Earth Day. So I'm sure that, you know, the committee is going to have something coming up around April the 20th. I think Mumia's Earth Day is April the 22nd. So usually every year, you know, there's something going on specifically around that time. So I'm sure they're getting ready for that again for this year as well.
Right.
All right, my brother. Well, again, we thank you for always chiming in, bringing us that information, bringing us that fire. And we got to get you on that brother's call. We had our brother's call again, National Brothers in Support for MWM 20, took place this Thursday. It was very, very good.
Yeah, I'm going to try to catch it next week. I was tied up. I saw your text.
Right. No, this one is every other week.
Okay.
It's every other week. So it won't be not this week coming, but the following week. Because we keep those for twice a month for the brothers. And, again, they did a wonderful job. One of the things that we talked about this time, Brother Mike, I told the brothers, I said, look, you know, we know that we have to work, meaning myself and other sisters, we got to work with our sisters and really start focusing on, you know, how we're going to raise our sisters up. And I said, and we have no problems with making certain that people know that we love our brothers, and the ones that are really standing up, taking care of business, we're going to make sure that people know that we respect them, we honor them, and we appreciate them. And the ones who are fake or phony, we're going to let the people know who they are too.
Good. Well, Sister Keisha said you coming to New York soon.
Oh, yeah, we're working on it to start bringing that committee, putting the committee together there. And so I think she's going to be confirming that for us within the next couple of days or so. And, yep, I'm on my way there as well.
Okay, good.
Right.
Looking forward to it.
All right, my brother. Well, again, I thank you as usual for all that you do. And let folks know tune in Tuesday, Community Cop. Give them that information.
ManhattanNeighborhoodNetwork.org. If you're not in New York City, you can get it on ManhattanNeighborhoodNetwork.org. It's online. So you just go to Community Cop, the live feed, and it's just that easy to do. Just Community Cop, 5 o'clock Tuesdays, 5 to 6 on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. That's Manhattan Neighborhood Network, or just MNN, Mary Nancy Nancy, .org. And plug right into the live feed.
Very, very good. All right, Brother Mac.
Looking forward to hearing from everybody. And, you know, after the first half hour, the phones are open. So we're ready to dialogue with anybody, you know, anywhere in the country or the world.
No doubt. And I tell you, brothers be putting it down, too. And it's so interesting and so wonderful to, you know, to watch the brother who's a clergyman to really be kicking it out the
window.
Oh, yes. See, that's what I'm talking about. I told you before, he got me, so I'm ready to go back to church.
Yeah, Father Luke is something else. And we definitely enjoy him. And he has people laughing. He's already shocking people, too, because he's clergy and wears
yep.
his clergy stuff. And
that's
he's not
right.
the youngest guy in the world either. So when you see him, you'll always be shocked by some of the things he's saying. So always stay tuned. And now that I'm in the house and I'm just looking at some of my notes from the show, we dealt with DOJ suing Ferguson. We dealt with Beyonce and, you know, and her symbolism of the, you know, the Black Panther
formation.
Women.
Yeah.
Yeah, formation. We dug with Reverend
Sharpton. Oh, with that said, Brother Mike,
jealous.
Wait, hold it right there for a minute. That reminds me, did you hear something about police planning a major demonstration against her?
Yeah. Several police unions here in New York City, the PBA, the SBA, and the LBA, all made statements similar to what Giuliani did. That's the Patrolman's Benevolent Association, Sergeant's Benevolent Association, and the Lieutenant's Benevolent Association all came out with similar statements to what Giuliani was saying about his anti-cop and that to, you know, salute the Black Panther Party and Malcolm X was wrong. And, of course, we said, who are they to tell us who to salute? The white man is no longer in a position to tell black men or women who our heroes are. We will choose that. We will determine who our heroes are, certainly, and who should be commended and who should be criticized or shunned. So they're not in a moral position nor any political position to tell us who to honor. And we made that crystal clear. So, you know, yes, it was a gathering of sorts where they condemned Beyonce, and this is why we have to show her love, because if we don't support her on things like this, we lose her. You know, and it's not good to lose her. Obviously, we could have thought of better symbolism than what she did, but she's not a Sada. She's Beyonce. Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
So, yeah. So
she's
Beyonce. She's not a Sada Shakur. She did the best she could given that situation. And so she did a good job. So we should honor her, you know, in to that regard, and not allow Giuliani or any police agencies criticize her. Because she did a good job on what she did.
Well, apparently, you know, and I hear you saying New York, but now Miami, the Miami Police Union is talking about protesting her. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now this is going national.
Sometimes our silence is deafening when you consider these attacks against her and you don't have major figures saying a word. You know, you're not the champion if you don't have an opponent. So, of course, it's easy for them to criticize Beyonce because you don't see black men and women commending her. As a matter of fact, a white organization of feminists said that she didn't include white women in her dances. Were all black. So she's getting criticized from all over. I mean, they're going to force her to employ some white dancers? I mean, black dancers can't get jobs as it is.
That's right.
So they're telling her the next time you do, what's it called, formation, to use some white women. I mean, how crazy is that?
Wow. Yep. Well, it looks
so
like
we for that, we gonna pull up anything.
It looks like that this was supposed to be or is going to be a concert in Miami on April the 27th. And according to the reports, it's indicating that the police union there, known as the Miami Fraternal Order of Police, will be boycotting that particular concert.
And I don't think she'll feel it at all. I don't think she will miss
not at all.
Those few police dollars. They don't go to her concerts anyway. And with their history of killing unarmed black men, they should be ashamed of themselves to be mad at symbolism when they're actually killing people.
Mm.
So, you know, they need to go find a rock to hide under.
Well, I'm going to sit back and wait just a few more weeks or so, not more than that, before I make a public statement, because I want to see if any of the other black women organizations are going to take a position.
Well, don't wait too long.
Because we are definitely going to.
I think we already know what these other black organizations are going to do.
But I specifically want to see the black women. You got several
notable
black women organizations, which I'll, you know, name at another time. But I want to just wait to see what their positions are on this. We're going to make one from the Million Women March movement. But again, I want to see what it is that they're going to say, because next month is Women's History Month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so
the thing is, if they don't support Beyonce, you have to remember the National Organization of White Women now, they support white men. They support white men and white women. Every time a white man does something to a black woman, they don't say a word.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are a white supremacist organization of white women. I spell now with two W's.
Two W's.
Because two W's. National Organization of White Women. Any black women in our organization, they're just furniture. That's all they are.
Wow.
It's just window dressing. They ain't real and they know it. Because they are silent when black women are raped by white men. You don't hear a peep from the National Organization of White Women.
All right. Well,
and you know yourself, nobody knows better than you. Look at all these black women that have been killed in police custody. Did the National Organization of White Women condemn any police officers for any of that? No.
That's not that I know of. That's right.
They didn't, you know. They didn't, and where were they for Sandra Bland and all these other cases?
Right. That's right. Well, it's all getting very interesting all across the board. So it is what I call the time for the miotic epoch. It's definitely at hand.
Right.
And, you know, we are designating this time for us. So as we move forward, I'm sure we're going to see a lot more visibility of the various things that we've been seeing in these past couple of years, because I think this system, Brother Mike, is beginning to get quite desperate.
Yeah, well, I mean, these are the times that try men's souls, because all this right now is in your face, you know, like that Jerry Springer stuff right in your face. And if you don't respond, the whole world is looking to see how are we as a people going to respond when you hear of all these black women and black children being killed unarmed, you know, by police departments, whose primary mission is to preserve human life. And for that to happen in police custody, where you should be safe, for that to happen on the street in unarmed situations where there's no combat involved, it is unconscionable. And for the world to just watch and look. We have to first strike the first blow for freedom. We have to organize, because they don't respect you if you're not organized. So we have to show a commitment. Yeah, there's got to be black love, but there has to be black responsibility. And I'm so glad that Keisha synthesized both. You know, even if I wasn't there, her message still would have been good, because she synthesized both. And, you know, and this is why I'm just so glad that she did that and asked me to open up for her, which was an honor to open up for her. But, you know, she was, you know, in track, you know, the fastest person, you know, is the last person you pass the baton to. And she carried it across the finish line very nicely.
I'm sure of that. I am so sure of that. But before we let you go, Brother Mike, one of the things I wanted to also convey to our family is, as it pertains to our brothers, is that one of the reasons why we're developing for the Million Women March and its movements a brotherhood component is because, just like with some of the things that Brother Mike is saying, we have to ask ourselves, if you have black men that do want to step up and do certain things, where are they going to go? You see, we have to really take a closer look at that as well. And so what we realize is that we have to create that, develop that ourselves. And so with that said, to have a MWM brotherhood along with our sisterhood, it really allows us to connect, you know, what we want to do as a community, as a family, a bit more effectively. So with that said, you heard Brother Mike here, you've heard Dr. Randy Short, you recently heard one of our brothers who has recently joined us here in Philly, Brother Charles Ted, who has the program Connecting the Dots. So, you know, you heard Brother Shamari. So, you know, in other words, brothers, those brothers who feel like it's time that you need to step things up on your end, we're going to have some brothers for you to be able to get with, build camaraderie with, and grow and develop and do the things that you hear us talking about here and that many of you are talking about as well, but don't know where to go or don't have a, you know, somewhere that you feel comfortable with placing your time and energy where it's really going to go into, you know, something that's going to be productive. So, again, stay tuned because it's coming.
No, that's
all right. Yes, yes, yes. All right, my brother, as usual, always good talking with you. And I have some information I'm going to be sharing with you next week to, you know, give you some insight into how we're getting ready to develop some of the next steps in what we're doing with MWM20.
Looking forward to it. I mean, Keisha talked about it a little bit, but looking forward to it, definitely.
All right, my brother, give thanks.
All right.
All right. All right, family. We've just been talking with our brother Mike Graves, of course, and again, tune into Community Cop every Tuesday, 5:00. You can hear them online, and as indicated, you can also call in after they do the overall briefing for the week to give you insight and information about very specific topics. Okay. We are going to close out early tonight. I want to get ready for tomorrow because, as indicated, I will be going over to hear Minister Farrakhan, but also Sister Ashira, who has been kind enough to help me get around in Detroit, is going to be taking me out tomorrow to a few places that she wants me to see, and we're going to get ready also to go to Flint. So I'm going to close out a little earlier tonight so that we can get ready to do some of those things. At any rate, we're going to give you all again the opportunity, if you have something you want to share with us before we close out, we certainly give you the opportunity to do so. You can press the button. So, right. And with that said, we want to also remind you that Sunday night, we will have our first telephone conference call for the We Charge Genocide campaign. And if you want more information about that, please feel free to send us an email at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm info@aol.com. We will send you the information about the We Charge Genocide 21 telephone conference call, which will take place Sunday night. I believe it's 9 o'clock, but there will be an e-blast, and also there will be a text message sent out. And again, if we don't have you in our network, again, you could just send your email information and or your telephone number, and we'll text the number out to you. Again, I think it's 9 o'clock on Sunday evening. The We Charge Genocide 21 campaign information will become available, and the committees are being formed, and you will also get the update on the United Nations report and how we are going to be connecting to that. Okay, doesn't look like anyone else has any other thing they want to share with us for right now. So with that said, we are going to close out early tonight, and we certainly thank you all for tuning into this segment of New Day. Looks like next week, again, we'll be bringing a report on Mrs. Madcon's speech for tomorrow and some other things. So as we move forward here in Detroit, because we will be here for a few days, and certainly we'll give you some insight next week into what our findings are, and also some of the accomplishments that we will have made. We're certain to have made quite a few by the time we come back to you again. So with that said, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep, and always know that there could never be any real peace, meaning Hotep, until there's truly Ma'at, meaning justice. And as Brother Mike will always say, people definitely have no justice, if not
no
what,
justice,
Brother Mike?
No peace.
No justice, no peace. Love you, my brother.
Love you back.
And love you all, family. And we thank you all. And remember, Pamoja Tutashinda, together we shall win. And guess what? It'll be soon. Peace to you all.